Welcome back to Everything is Public Health. I'm MJ.
And I'm Cass.
So there were several really depressing news stories last year in the year of 2023.
Oh man, this is how you're going to start this episode? Okay. All right, sorry. Go ahead.
I mean, you'll see where I'm going. Arguably every year recently, there's been depressing news stories. But this year in particular, do you remember the piece of news that shocked you or shook you the most last year?
No. Honestly, like I probably should remember, but
that's fine. I think that's good.
But it all bleeds together. And honestly, like I have to follow so many news stories
for
work related things that, you know, obviously the Covenant school shooting was particularly troubling. Lack of action by the Tennessee legislature following that shooting and sort of the special session that turned into a nothing burger, as my colleague Jen Polyakonis likes to say.
We like burgers, but not nothing burgers.
Not a nothing burger. No, it's a bummer. So probably those are the things that stand out. I don't know if it's the thing that shook me the most, but it's sort of the first thing that popped into mind.
Yeah, you're in that space, so it makes sense. Those are the news that you have more exposure to. For me, it's this really relatively insignificant post by the New York Times that most people probably didn't even take notice of. The title was something along the lines of Central Park now 2 years without snow. And for some reason, I can't quite articulate eloquently why that sent me into a depression spiral that day. And I started to think about how Baltimore also hasn't seen much snow in the last 2 years and how winter are much warmer now. And I don't know why, like this stuck in my mind and made me more sad than hearing about Ukraine and Palestine, which says a lot about me as a person. But I don't know. Like, I really felt really, really depressed that day when I saw that post, even though it's probably didn't even strike people's top 10 about like news stories of last year.
No, but I can totally see why that would be distressing, because something I was thinking about earlier this year was that the cold, quote unquote, winter, like seems to be shifting back, for lack of a better term. Like when I first moved to the East Coast, you know, it would get cold
in November,
at least by October, at least. And then, you know, we regularly were getting tons of snow.
Relatively,
you know, sometimes we'd have a white Christmas, but usually like by this time, by early January, we would have snow. And then it would, you know, warm up March, April, sometimes still be a little bit chilly. But I remember the last couple of years, it's been no snow, but then it's warm, like not this past Christmas, but the Christmas before it was 75 degrees on Christmas Day.
For Christmas.
And then it's like 20 degrees in April. So I don't know how much it's shifting, but yeah, really warm, dry. The thing actually, now that you have said this, the thing that jumped out to me in 2024 in terms of news stories that shook me the most already.
We're 5 days in.
Was that I read a story in the New York Times that 2024, they're projecting it to be warmer than 2023.
Yeah.
And they blamed 2023 being warm on a La Nina.
Yeah.
But now they're just saying, it's probably going to be warmer.
That's so sad. Yeah, so that news story, even though I think a lot of people didn't see it, made me really sad and just like completely nihilistic existential crisis sad. And I was like holed up in a corner. But, you know, needless to say, not only is climate change real and present danger, we can now all feel its effect. Like in living memory, we can feel its effect. It's no longer like this abstract scientific thing. We live in a climate crisis at the moment. And we already talked about some of the effects of climate change on public health in past episodes. Do you remember any?
Sure. So drought, right? You're not getting rain, or you're getting too much rain.
Floods.
Depending on where you are. So floods. Crop. So it's affecting food growing. I know, like I was so sad to see that some places they're not able to produce wine because the grapes are growing.
Cass.
No. You know, I have a nice wine cellar in my basement just because I, you know, I want to make sure I've got a good stock. But no, but that was just an example of, you know, not having good sort of crop turnout. Obviously, there are health issues, so exposures to pollutants in the air with wildfires and, you know, damage, those sorts of things. I could keep going, but those are the ones that come top of mind.
Yeah. Heat waves. It's another one that's like in the summer was really deadly for places that weren't ready for them. And they're just going to be more common. But anyway, the effects of climate change are manifold. One aspect that I think is flies under the radar because things like heat waves, extreme weather events are more obvious, is the climate's impact on our ecological space. Like not environment, but ecology.
Right. So with environment, some of the things I mentioned, we think about pollution from fires and whatnot, but then there's also runoff and groundwater, losing habitats for animals, you know, different species and whatnot. But for ecology, we're thinking about the ecosystem, what animals live in the ecosystem, what kind of diversity is there in that ecosystem, and climate's impact on ecology might be things like birds or other animals going extinct, and that messes up the food chain or the balance of the ecosystem. And how might that impact other animals? And, you know, I was, as a kid, I really loved the food web idea. I never honestly understood the concept of a food chain because I was like,
because people eat different things.
Right. Yeah. And animals eat different things. I mean, usually, you know, there might be some restrictions on what animals eat, but it was never like this one thing eats that one thing, which eats that one thing, which is that. So anyway, food webs.
Food webs is the more accurate term. And I think most people don't realize that ecology is not something that exists like out there in the wilderness. Like we are all living in an ecosystem, like right now. In fact, our existence often means destroying wide parts of that ecosystem and wiping out many species of animals and insects in the process. We are not isolated from the ecosystem. When the ecosystem is unhealthy, like we are in the ecosystem, it just doesn't feel that way because we're surrounded by concrete and like steel and wood and glass. But we're in an ecosystem and people don't realize that, I don't think.
Yeah. And simultaneously, I think people think about humans as being like the top of
the apex,
quote unquote, food chain, the top of the web, right? But I think people also simultaneously don't think of humans as animals.
Yeah.
Because, you know, oh, we're so evolved, we're so whatever. But like, yeah, we're all animals, you know, these living things that are part of this system, this web. And when we do things to muck that system up through
so many things,
whatever we're doing with our companies, our production, those sorts of things, like the world is ours, yes, but with great power comes great responsibility.
Spider-Man.
Yes, I am quoting Spider-Man. And so we need to do a way better job of not mucking things up so that we can, you know, try to not ruin the planet for all the other living things.
I know. We live in an ecology. We live in a world that's shared by other things. So today we're going to talk about one often overlooked aspect of ecology, insects. Cass, do you like insects?
No, I do not.
Okay. That was a very short response. Is there a particular type that you don't like or just all insects in general?
I particularly dislike cockroaches.
Okay.
I had cockroaches in my first apartment in Philadelphia. Mm. And one, they're like super bad for asthmatics. So right, like that was really, really unhealthy. But they are just, they're gross and they're giant. Ugh, I had like cockroaches the size of my thumb in my apartment in Philadelphia. So gross. I don't mind, like, if insects want to be outside, totally fine. I don't want insects.
This is the ecology thing we're talking about. You just want the ecology to be out there. You don't want the ecology to be in here.
I'm not a bug killer.
Right.
So, like, if I find a bug in my house, I will scoop it up with, like, a cup and a piece of paper and release it outside where it belongs. I don't want it in my house. Although, like, I like ladybugs. Ladybugs are cute.
Ladybugs are cute. Well, as someone who grew up, at least partially in Asia, American cockroaches got nothing on Asian cockroaches.
Totally fair.
That's neither here or there. Anyway, so before we get into the climate angle, there's a lot to discuss already regarding insects and public health. Well, it's that time of the show again. The first in 2024, Cass makes an educated guess. This is a speed round. Are you ready, Cass?
What am I doing?
You have 10 seconds to name as many infectious diseases that are primarily transmitted by insects. Your 10 seconds starts now.
Malaria, Zika, Ebola, dengue? Yellow fever?
Five.
I think that's 10 seconds. I don't know.
okay, now it is. Those are the big ones. Ebola.
Oh, not Lyme. I forgot Lyme disease.
The tick disease.
I had Lyme disease a couple of years ago. I should have remembered that. I was like, I know there's one that's like, I've had it.
Yes, Lyme disease. Another big one. Ebola, I think Ebola spread people to people. Some people mostly associate Ebola with people to people spread.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. I thought that maybe it started somewhere. Anyway.
Yeah, we don't typically associate that with insects. But yes, malaria, Zika. I can't even begin to pronounce this one. Do you want to give it?
Chikungunya?
Yeah. Oh, actually, I think that's right. Yeah, chikungunya, West Nile, Lyme, the one that you got, unfortunately. Alpha gal. Have you heard of this one?
No.
Alpha gal makes you allergic to red meat. So a lot of people are deathly afraid to get it.
Oh, that's terrifying.
Like permanently allergic to red meat once you get it. Like it's like a residual effect.
Okay, but what kind of red meat? Like just
anything just with beef? A Milo. What is it? Like the thing that makes your muscle red.
So like no lamb. No duck.
Correct. Only fish and arguably chicken.
Poultry and pork. Pork is the other white meat.
No, pork is red meat.
No, it's not. I grew up to commercials that pork is the other white meat. Are you telling me that they lied to me?
Yes, commercials lie to you. We could do a whole series on how commercials lie to you. Alpha gal, a lot of people are afraid to get it because it makes you allergic to red meat. A Rocky Mountain spotted fever, a little bit more serious. Yeah. And a bunch of arbovirus, dengue, yellow fever. Japanese encephalitis was very lethal back in, I want to say the 70s or 80s, but we have vaccines for them now. But prior to vaccines, a lot of people were scared of that. Sleeping sickness or African trypanosomiasis? African trypanosomiasis.
Just call it sleeping sickness.
Sleeping sickness.
MJ can't grammar.
I can't English. Well, the reason why it's the African trypanosomiasis, there's the American trypanosomiasis, which is different, called Chagas disease, spread by kissing bugs.
Chagas
disease, spread by kissing bugs. The plague, fleas.
Yes, of course.
And cutaneous leishmaniasis, sand flies. So, I mean, the list goes on, but these are the main ones when we think of like insect-borne disease. And to a lesser extent, salmonella, typhoid, shigella, but they spread via other means too. So people don't necessarily associate them with insects. Most of these diseases actually are active public health concerns, whether locally in certain countries and communities or globally. And I think we will do an episode about public health strategies for dealing with insect-borne disease in the future because it's a very interesting topic. This has become a problem. If we get a nickel for every time we say we're going to cover something in the future, we would have a ton of dollars. But anyway,
yes.
If you are a public health person trying to mitigate disease and said disease is spread via insects, essentially, what you have is an insect problem in terms of public health strategies.
Absolutely. So your strategy to control the disease likely would probably start with or revolve around strategies to control the insects. So thinking about, can you keep them from reproducing? Your script says replicating.
What? What? Is that not a right word? Replicating.
Reproducing. Reproducing. They're not clones. Anyway, so strategies to prevent insects from reproducing. So you might destroy breeding grounds. You might address or remove standing water, for example, if you're thinking about mosquitoes. You might want to prevent contact between the insects and humans. So you might do mosquito nets over beds or some other kind of protective gear, bug spray, repellent, etc. You could sort of tell people don't go around in the areas where those particular insects are.
Unfortunately, it doesn't work.
Well, yeah, people are really not good at telling them not to do a thing and then they don't do it. Telling somebody to not do a thing, they are like, ooh, that sounds like a great idea.
Exactly.
Or you can also sort of actively kill the insects, which, you know, that can be really tricky. Sometimes mistakes are made and, you know, thinking about an ecosystem and the food web, wiping out entire sort of populations of bugs might have impacts on birds, other bugs, etc. Or you might totally the bed and destroy things that you're not intending to destroy also.
Yeah. The number of times where we meant to eliminate one species but end up eliminating another species is too many to count. And also, I think the worst offender is saying, oh, we'll bring this invasive species. I love to eat this insect.
Oh, God.
And Australia has done this multiple times and they are now like suffering the consequences of it. Anyway, so just be aware when people say, yeah, let's just kill all the insects.
Well, and that's a challenge too with like global food production, because if we are producing food in certain areas that were never really intended to be consumed in other areas, but we stick them on a ship and we float them across the globe, around the globe, whatever, to another country, you're inevitably going to get bugs that come along with it, like stink bugs and lantern flies and all of these other issues. And so that's sort of the globalization economy and production when it comes with food has a lot of drawbacks also.
Yes. And this will play a part in our next section. So what does climate change have to do with this? Well, a changing climate means a changing ecosystem. And when ecosystems change, the animals and insects and plants living in those ecosystems will react accordingly. Perhaps they will reduce in numbers. That's very common. They just die off because the ecosystem no longer supports them. Perhaps they will increase in numbers because of, you know, changes to the food web. But the main concern scientists have, at least with insects, especially insects that carry these diseases, is the relocation or the spread of the insect population to other places.
Right. And so, for example, there are insects that carry the diseases that we talked about that are in tropical regions, warm,
wet,
humid places. And with global warming, those insects can survive in places that previously they could not. And we were just hearing over the summer about the climate being warmer in the mid-Atlantic region and bugs carrying diseases that normally wouldn't survive in our area are making it up, and people are getting cases of those diseases in the mid-Atlantic of the United States because things are warmer and bugs are migrating north.
Exactly. Do you remember what diseases?
I don't. My mother-in-law was just like, oh my God, there's a disease that, you know, blah, 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 so-and-so got something, something. And I was like, oh, that's scary.
Yeah, it is. Or vice versa. The insect can no longer survive in their original ecosystem due to warming, so they head to cooler climates that are now not cold enough to kill them, but cooler than where they are now. You see where I'm going with this?
Yeah, I mean, this is, I know that we're talking about insects, but this is true with a marine life, with lobsters and fish and whales and all, like going further north to try to get, like, not off the coast of Maine anymore for lobsters because it's too warm.
Yeah. And other examples, just really quick, climate change could affect the population or behaviors of the insect's predator. And with the whole food web, if your predator is no longer there, guess what happens to the insects, right? They grow unrestricted.
Climate change might also make the breeding season longer for insects, meaning that then there's more time for them to reproduce, produce more of them, and then there'll be more of them sort of incrementally or exponentially moving forward.
Oftentimes exponentially, because that's how insect reproduction works, unfortunately. Climate change could also affect migration patterns for insects. This is sort of the point that we were talking about earlier. You know, changing climate, they got to go somewhere that they like better. That somewhere else might be where the people are, you know?
And good old Charles Darwin, evolution.
Oh boy.
Climate change could also select for worse versions of an insect that might, you know, carry worse versions of disease or make it easier to transmit or harder to sort of kill off and protect human populations from.
Stronger bugs.
Arnold Schwarzenegger versions of insects.
Yeah, hard to kill.
I'll be back like a Terminator.
Stronger due to natural selections. And we're seeing this now. More accurately, we have been seeing this for years now. Disease-carrying insects spreading to places that previously they weren't at, caused by climate change. And I think one thing that I want to address is the stereotype that these diseases are in like poor third world countries in Africa and Asia. That is wrong. That's an artifact of colonialism. Like, we live in a pretty globalized world. Did you know there's malaria and dengue cases every year in the US, like locally spread, not like travel associated?
Right. That was what I, like, when my mother-in-law was talking about these cases moving up to the mid-Atlantic, it was because there are these insect populations that were moving north because it's warm, and now these cases that had been in places like Louisiana or Texas or wherever were now moving up into the mid-Atlantic, which hadn't had to deal with that before.
Yeah, I think people don't realize that there's dengue in the US. Like, people just like, oh, no, that's some like African stuff, or that's some like Asian, Southeast Asian stuff. No, like, these things are everywhere. You just don't hear about them because, of, you know, for various reasons. We still have West Nile. I didn't know this, but we still have West Nile in the US. It's not some magical disease that exists somewhere else. But yeah, there's a lot of these, like, I mean, if you Google, you'll find a bunch of these headlines of like, oh, you know, this disease, first case in like X years in the US, and you could see the spread of these diseases. I don't know if you, I certainly wasn't aware of the news about this, but Florida and Texas had a Zika virus outbreak in 2017, which is only 8 years ago.
Yeah, I was well into my public health career at that point. And yeah, we were very aware of the Zika outbreak and what that meant and sort of controlling the spread.
Yeah. And that was the one, was that the one that causes birth defects?
Yeah. Something with the brain head development, head size, like babies have really small heads, I think.
Yeah, I think so. And there's a type of sandfly that has spread, cutaneous leishmaniasis found in the US, previously not seen here before. But a lot of insect people, entomologists,
is a bug.
Yes. A lot of entomologists are like really sounding the alarm, but it falls on deaf ears because people just don't take this seriously, I guess. I mean, one of the many public health issues that I think people should care more about, but unfortunately don't, is these insect-borne diseases. They are spreading with the help of climate change and globalization. They're affecting populations that previously weren't being affected.
And it's likely, not to be the Debbie Downer here, but it's likely to only get worse.
Yes, correct.
On that note.
So yeah, thank you for listening. Thank you for listening to this episode of Everything is Public Health. If you like the show, please share it with your friends, family, and acquaintances. That is the best thing you can do to help us tell everyone how awesome and ubiquitous public health is. And, you know, care more about bugs, I guess, is my final message.
Or at least hate them less.
Right.
Please follow us on Threads, Instagram, and Mastodon, all at Everything is Public Health. And also Blue Sky Social at Everything is PH. We are no longer using the Twitter. You can find me sometimes on Threads at CassPhD.
New episodes are released every Thursday on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Please leave us a rating and a review. It helps the show immensely. If you have any feedback, suggestions, or think we miss an important perspective, please reach out to us at everythingispublichealth@gmail.com.
If you want to support the show directly, we have a Patreon page, which also acts like our website. Follow us there for all major updates and bonus material. And remember, everything is public health.
Everything is public health.